Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey guys, Ryan here. Before we get to this week's episode, we won. Somewhere in the Skies won two awards at the 2021 Paranormal Podcast Awards. Best UFO Alien Podcast and Paranormal Podcast of the Year. I was so honored to be nominated among so many other amazing podcasts in both categories, and it certainly raised the bar for me personally and for the show. Congratulations to all the nominees and winners, especially some of our good friends, including the Cryptonaut Podcast for Best Cryptid Podcast, Let's Get Haunted for Best Ghost Stories Podcast, Lore for Best Horror Podcast, Into the Fray Radio for Best Interview Podcast, Monsters Among Us for Best Paranormal Podcast, and Hysteria 51 for Best Paranormal Comedy Podcast. Be sure to check out all these amazing shows and all the other incredible nominees over at ParanormalityMag.com. My special thanks to Paranormality Magazine, to everyone who voted, and especially to you for all of your support along the way. And now, for another volume of UFO Happy Hour.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Welcome to Somewhere in the Skies. As always, I am your host, Ryan Sprague, and welcome to another volume of UFO Happy Hour. So you know what that means. He is back, the host of the Our Strange Skies podcast. I'm not even sure which volume this is anymore because they are all a blur. They are all the most fun we have here on Somewhere in the Skies. So I am so honored to once again bring him back to the show. Rob Christofferson, welcome back, brother.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me back on. Having me back on the best UFO podcast. It was announced yesterday, people. This is the best UFO podcast. It won the podcast award. You got the bona fides now. So,
well, that's extremely kind of you, man. I mean, I was amongst some heavy competition. You should have been in there, in my personal opinion, and you should have won. But that's. You know, it is what it is.
If I had had a better year, if I had had a better output, maybe. But I'm kind of one of those turning into the kind of person that's just like, when I feel like this episode has what it needs, and I'm confident that it's the best that I can put forward in that episode, I'll put it out.
Absolutely.
Unless it's just a discussion with people, you know, discussion with, friends, or if it's a 2-hour presentation for a paranormal conference.
Exactly. No, and that's why I've always respected what you do. You drop it when you want. You put the research in. You're under, no pressure to just get things out for the sake of it. And that's amazing. So when you do come out with something, it's like a big event. It's like the new, phase 4 of a Marvel movie coming out. Everyone's like, oh, my God, it just drops. So, no, man, I highly respect that. And I highly respect all the shows that were nominated for those awards. So thank you to Paranormality Magazine. Our good friends, That UFO Podcast, were right there next to us. So that's why I love this community, man. Podcasting community is the most supportive I've ever come across, way more than the UFO community. Something we'll talk about tonight for sure. But yeah, if you are watching on YouTube, you do see the continent of Africa in the background there. So that's what we're going to be discussing tonight, man. Our last happy hour was all about UFOs in New York, but we're going to travel. we're going to Africa, where a lot of cases are not talked about here in America about what goes on in Africa. You know, we have very few researchers who have put in the time and effort to do that. And I know you highlight a lot of the research done by one of those individuals in a talk you gave recently at a conference. So would you mind, before we dive deep into UFOs in Africa, tell us a little about the conference you just took part in, if you don't mind, and a little about maybe what we'll be talking about tonight.
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, I gave a two-hour presentation at PAN, Paranormal Con, and it was a conference that was meant to be very inclusive, to talk about issues that are often left out of the paranormal community because nobody wants to talk about them. People want to talk about the cases and stuff like that, and like, I get that totally, but they were issues that needed to be highlighted. So for this conference, I was asked to actually give a presentation. The first time I've ever given a presentation on anything. And I had already started working on like the research for these cases from Africa, because I wanted to do an episode and I wanted to highlight a lot of cases. So the main researcher that did a lot of the work on the cases from Africa and it just put the time in for over 20 years was Cynthia Hine. She wrote literally two books about it. She had a magazine dedicated to the subject called UFO Afro News. She ran it for about a decade and a half. Like the sad part was, and from what I was able to glean just from the research I was able to do, is like UFO research kind of lived and died with her. Like she, there was definitely, you know, a bunch of researchers in a bunch of different countries that were, you know, feeding her cases and having them published and stuff like that. But when she died in 2000, like it just kind of, you know, died with her. And that's not to say that there aren't investigators today in Africa. But the problem is that if you go to your browser right now, you go to Google and you type in UFOs Africa, what you're going to get is a BBC article about the Ariel school landing. And don't get me wrong, right, that is one of the most important cases of the last 30 years. Hands down, it's incredibly important. And it's kind of a great representation of what Africa brings to the table in terms of UFO cases, because you get a lot of different cultural perspectives that you don't necessarily get in the United States, because, you know, I'm just going to say it, the United States is very white. So the demographic of cases that you're getting are primarily from white people. And that's not to say that black people do not experience UFOs in the States, but primarily your reporting comes from white people. That's just something we have to admit. That's just something that it is what it is. But when you go and you look in Africa, that same trend still exists. And primarily, and Cynthia Hine, she was a white woman, so we can totally, you know, that's totally fine.
Fault her for that.
yeah. It's like, no, she was from South Africa. She's
right,
African through and through. So, one of the things that she highlighted is that there are different reasons why some things get reported as UFOs and some things don't. So the main thing is the cultural context. So in a lot of UFO cases, particularly involving folks of people of color, Black African ancestry, they often relate them to spiritual ancestors or ghosts. And that's not to say that, you know, some phenomenon in the United States aren't related to that. Ghost lights are very often, you know, considered to be of a spiritual nature. So oftentimes these are very similar things, but more often than not, they are viewed as ancestral spirits. But what you find more and more is that the cases that Cynthia Hine investigated, the cases that were reported to her, 99.99% were reported by white people. And if they were involving folks of Black African ancestry, they were reported to her by a white person anyway. So that's something that is endlessly fascinating to me, something that I don't think that we just have enough data at this point to really get to the bottom of. But it's important to note these things when talking about UFOs from other countries, because as much as I don't like or have issues with Mick West, there was that one map that he retweeted on Twitter a couple months ago, and it's that thermal image of UFO cases from around the world. And you see that, you know, in the United States, that thing is bright as hell. And one of the comments that he made was that this is clearly a cultural thing. And while that's not totally the case, because we have UFOs all over the place, that map also doesn't take into consideration that these are reported cases. So you're going to get less reports from other countries that don't right. have the investigators. So given that, to an extent, yes, it is a cultural phenomenon through and through. Definitely. And you can see this while looking at other countries. So if you look at Puerto Rico, for instance, a lot of the UFO cases that come from Puerto Rico, they almost seem to be indigenous inhabitants of the island in a certain right. respect, especially yeah. from a lot of the cases that you get are from rural areas and in the El Yunque rainforest. When you look at cases from Brazil, they are often hostile. Like that is one aspect of these cases, is that they are often hostile towards the people that live there. And in the United States, especially right now, given the conversation of UFOs in the UFO community, it's a military bent. You have a very military image of the phenomenon, despite the fact that you have a very long and historied, you know, case file of just crazy cases all over the place. It has a very predominant image of being a military phenomenon right now. So culture definitely plays a part in it. So in Africa, I was kind of able to break it down into four different types of cases. And a lot of these are going to be similar to what you see in the United States and such. But the first one that I want to note is very important, which is the idea of these globes or orbs of light. These are very important, and often these cases are reported by people of Black African ancestry, people of color. They are often the ones that interact with these things. And the most important case to come from Africa on this is known as the La Rochelle incident. And this really gets into the cultural aspects of this phenomenon. So on the border of Zimbabwe in the Mbeza Valley is this very beautiful estate called La Rochelle. It was built by Stephen and Virginia Courtauld, who were these wealthy folks that treated the country right. They it was known as Rhodesia at the time, but it would later go on to become Zimbabwe. I think might have even happened before they left. But they built this property that has like this beautiful watchtower. There's like a tea room. There is a building that is called the Fantasy Building. And this is where Virginia Courtauld would like house her orchids and like have friends over and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, that's an interesting name for the building. But
sounds a little like Michael Jackson's house, if you ask me.
Yeah, definitely out there, and like architectural choices totally just out there, just a combination yeah. of mishmash of different things.
But, I love it.
Yeah, you could search this place online. You could actually book events there if you want to.
Yeah. It looks really cool. To be serious, it reminds me a lot of like the Great Gatsby. You know, like yeah. just this huge house, every room is themed. And yep. yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, man. But yeah, no, I did look into the house and it's crazy. So no yeah. wonder something weird happened there. So yeah, please go on.
Yeah. So in 72, the Courtaulds left Zimbabwe and they kind of just gave the property to the country. And then they just decided to... It's served a lot of different purposes over the years. It's served as an educational center. It's served as, you know, a place that you can book weddings, you can book conferences and things like that. But it was overseen by the Forestry Service at the time. And in 1981, August of 1981, when this event happened, there was about 20 staff that worked there. So August 15th, 1981, it was about 5:30 at night. And there was a woman named Eunice Kochte. She taught, I believe, like basket making and things like that that you could learn out there. And a lot of the folks lived there. So she looked out her window and she could see this globe of light at the top of a cassia tree. And she saw these three figures right at the base of it, just looking up at it. And like, she couldn't make out a lot of details, but the one detail that was interesting was that they were all wearing jeans, but they were all just like standing next to each other. And then the next moment, this globe of light just like climbs down the tree, starts mm-hmm. rolling around the property, which the one thing that they described this globe of light as is a ball of fire. But it didn't leave any scorch marks. It didn't burn the grass or the ground. But it rolled from the tree, ran to the tea room, and then it ran back to the tree. And it kept going back and forth for a while until it just kind of kept going on the property, just rolling around. And you just didn't really know what to make of it. But interestingly enough, like about 15 minutes later, there was another witness named Nason Simpandi. And he pokes his head out the door because he starts to hear this ruckus. He doesn't know what's going on. So he sees this globe of light, immediately goes back in his house. He's like, nope, that's a ghost. I'm not dealing with that. Pieces out.
Nice.
But this ball makes its way to this watchtower. And then it starts to climb up the watchtower. And it enters it through this window at the top. And the witnesses that were all starting to mount at this time noticed that like it looked like the room was on fire, is what they would say. And eventually this ball would start rolling down. Now, as it did, there was the main witness in this case is a gentleman named Clifford Machena, who was the head gardener at the time there. And he sees this ball rolling out this tower, and he decides to follow it. He's going to go hit the emergency bell because he thinks that it's just a fire, a very strange fire. But as he rounds this corner, as it's headed for the fantasy building, he notices three figures. They're just standing there with his back to him. And he believes that it's his boss, a guy named Andrew Connolly. So he yells out, calls these one of these figures, Mr. Connolly. They all three turn around. And that's when he notices, like, they're wearing these, like, very shiny overalls, but their heads were just, like, emitting pure light. And he got terrified. He fell to his knees. He fell forward so he could just, like, block the light from his face. He didn't know exactly what he was seeing. But he just covered up for a number of minutes until he brought his head back up and he noticed that everything was gone. So eventually, Andrew Connolly learns of this incident and gets in contact with Cynthia Hine. Cynthia Hine comes out not long after this event took place, and she starts interviewing the witnesses. And she talks to Clifford Machena. And she ask him, well, what do you think this was? And he's like, I think it was the ghosts of my ancestors. And he was a member of the Mashona tribe, which many of the employees there were members of their of that tribe. And there was a spirit in particular that they called a rave. And essentially a rave is like a spirit that is not at rest because its ancestors have not put it to rest for one reason or another. They have some purpose to fill. But she asked him, yeah, I think it's a ghost. And she just kind of pressed him. Was like, well, that's not what your spirits, your ancestrals would look like, you know? He had the best response. He responds back, well, you know, times change.
Times change. That's ancestral ghosts change. We all grow.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, you know, going through additional cases of Cynthia Hines, you find these cases where these witnesses see these craft, like something that should clearly be technology. They see people get out of this craft and they still think it's a spirit. That's endlessly fascinating that their beliefs, their tribal beliefs are, you know, still, you know, widely intact, and it's viewed through that lens as opposed to a technological lens or an interdimensional lens. And that's what makes these cases fascinating from Africa, is that there are multiple different cultures at one point looking at this phenomenon and coming to different conclusions. So that's important in terms of a lot of the time why you don't hear a lot of cases coming from Africa, because a lot of the inhabitants of Africa do not associate them with aliens or advanced right. technology or anything like
or,
that.
Or I would assume, Rob, like, they don't report it because it's kind of a given that, like, mm-hmm. your ancestors would eventually visit you in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. I mean, that's a presumption on my part, but I would imagine that's why, you know, and who to report it to. You know, again, right. if you have a supernatural experience that's part of your culture or religion, like, yeah. you just embrace it and move on. You're not seeking out a UFO researcher because maybe by chance you had heard that these things happened elsewhere in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. and I know that's what we're going to talk about as well, is like the conditioning that kind of pop culture and mm-hmm. other countries have when other countries or cultures report these things as well. Yeah. But wow, that's fascinating. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's all good, man. There's another case kind of like this with a guy named Maganga. And he was actually just traveling home. He was taking this path, and he saw this ball of light. It just appeared right in the middle of the path, right in front of him. He was terrified. He thought it was ghosts, too. He turns around, starts to run backwards. It appears in front of him again. He keeps turning around until eventually this ball of light goes out, and he feels these like hands around his neck, falls to his knees. And when the hands, the sensation kind of finally falls away, he ends up running home. He ultimately ends up suffering from health effects. He wasn't able to walk around. He didn't have a lot of energy. They eventually called in a medicine man, and the medicine man gave him an herbal remedy that made him throw up this like nasty green bile, and he was fine after that. But again, that's speaks to that cultural context within this phenomenon, is that what one person's unidentified flying weird looking light is something else to someone else and to different cultures in this this country or in this continent. I'm sorry.
I love that. Yeah. It's Jacques Vallée all the way, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. It's one man's demon is another's fairy, is another's alien. That's what I love about this topic. And I know you and I have discussed that in the past, this amorphous nature to it all, that you can put every lens on it. You know, in America right now, it's military. Elsewhere, it's ancestral ghosts.
Yeah,
somewhere else,
exactly.
It's, you know, it's interdimensional beings. I don't know. But those are fascinating. Now, those are part of the first category, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And the second category is the CE1. There are CE1 cases very much in line with the classic saucers and things like that. And one of the most interesting cases from this tier occurred to a guy named Joe Seeley, who was he had some money. And on this particular day, this was in like late November, early December 1980, he was bringing home a live-in maidservant. He had just hired her, and he was just on the way back to his property when he was driving in Cape Town, South Africa. And he sees this glint in the sky. It's very high up. And then he watches it just descend rather quickly. And what he says he sees is very out of the ordinary. It has a lot of the characteristics of a UFO, but it looks very terrestrial. So what he said he saw was like a rocket. But this rocket, they weren't hiding it. It said USA on it. It had a flag on it. There were other identifying markers on this thing. And the thing was, is like it came down at an angle, and then it just kind of flattened out, hovered above the road. The thing was, is like he said that this thing was emitting fire out of the back of it, but he never heard a thing. Like he got out of his car, looked at this thing. Yeah, it was completely silent. Like even as close as it got. I think he said he was about like 300 meters or so away. So, you know, fairly close up. Definitely easy to see. This was in broad daylight. So he sees this thing and it kind of just like revolves around a couple times. And like he describes this thing at one point as being quote unquote dumpy, which is like the most hilarious thing that you can say about a UFO. This UFO was dumpy. Okay, great.
Dumps thanks, like Joe. A truck. I love it. Dumpy. That is one descriptor I've never heard in any Project Blue Book file, no. To my knowledge, or anything. I love it.
I mean, the only other thing that comes close is clown pants, and like, not everything can be clown pants, man. I mean, those are for the worst of the worst. You know, you're on a Hollywood set, you throw some clown pants in the air, and you try to pass it off as a UFO. At least that's what that MUFON investigator came to. But, yep. You know, dumpy UFOs hovering over the road. He watches this thing for a couple minutes, and then it just shoots off up into the air. But, like, the odd thing of it, he said it also felt like he was kind of in a vacuum. It was very still, very silent. And, like, that's one of those features of the UFO phenomenon, is that you often find these accounts of people saying, well, there was no sound. Hey, there should have been crickets here, but hey, they just shut the hell up for whatever reason. And very similar instance, you know, two witnesses. The woman that he had in the car was a black woman. So you got different perspectives there, which I appreciate. And I don't know what she thought of it, because apparently he fired her not long after for stealing or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, no. But
like, yeah, it's like, okay, whatever, Joe.
This was a diversion for her to steal that extra cash in his glove compartment. Oh, that's a bummer, because that's who I would want to hear from to see what her perception of the event is like. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Exactly. Like, multiple witnesses, potentially from multiple different backgrounds, and again, that's what makes these cases so endlessly fascinating, is the perspectives that you're given. But like, Joe just kind of a weird dude. He just seemed like a weird dude to begin with anyway.
Well, Rob, you mentioned, did he specifically said he saw US stamped on that thing? Am I correct?
USA American flag right on the thing. He said that he saw other identifying marks, but he couldn't remember them, and he was considering going in for hypnosis at the time, which was something that Cynthia Hind was recommending that he do. But for those that are watching on YouTube, I'll bring up an image. I've got it, the handy dandy book right here. There you go. USA, and there's like some other like numbers that they put at the bottom of the thing. There you go. Now we're focused.
Nice.
But like he said that there was like a ton of flame coming out of the bottom of the back of this thing. Oh, and then you have the penis UFO here. We can't go. I'll just mention this briefly. So there's a section in this book about different shapes of objects that are seen, and one thing that seems to come up is like cylindrical shaped objects. They're mentioned like all the time. And there's this one case from these five guys who are attending a funeral for their friend, and they describe seeing a lozenge shaped object with like these balls of light at the end, and like when you see representations of it in UFO Afro-News and in that book, it looks like a penis with some balls on the end. That's like the only way that you can describe it.
Yeah, there's no getting around it. You know, call us immature, but come on. I mean, when you see that picture in that book, you're like, wait, you got to look at the cover again and be like, this is a UFO book, right? I didn't mistake this for something. Wow, man. That's a crazy case. Like, I want to be like, okay, it was a rocket from the U.S., but like you said, it was completely silent. And also, what was a U.S. rocket doing over there? I mean, maybe it was landing or coming from space, but again, how could it be completely quiet? That's what really gets to me on that
right.
one.
And how can it just like shoot out all that flame and still be so maneuverable? Like,
and then zip away. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much high strangeness to that case that like the nice thing is like there are those cases that have that subtle high strangeness stuff that just like kind of like, okay, that's a little weird. Let's, but you know, that's definitely one of those kind of cases for sure. Nice. That has that kind of feature, which I absolutely love.
What's up, guys? Ryan Sprague here, and I'm just dropping in to remind you about our Patreon campaign. Somewhere in the Skies is always free to consume, but it's not free to create. So if you want to help the show on a monthly basis, we have tons of rewards for you in return, including shoutouts on the show and website, bonus content and episodes, and free merch. Want to be my guest or pick a topic for the show? You can do that too. So if you'd like to learn more and to help support the show, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you, and keep looking up.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
What's up, guys? Ryan dropping in to wish you all a very happy Halloween season. And what better way to celebrate than with Jim Harold's Campfire Podcast? With over 500 episodes of Campfire, you'll hear stories that will bend your reality and leave you truly spooked. The concept is pretty simple. Jim talks to regular folks about strange stuff that happens to them. And yes, that includes UFOs and UAPs, along with cryptids and, of course, ghosts. Now, not all the stories are horrifying. Some are pretty heartwarming, like a visit from a past loved one or a peaceful near-death experience. Regardless, they are true and fascinating stories, as told by ordinary people who've had extraordinary experiences. So, pull up a log and tune in to Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to Somewhere in the Skies. And remember, stay spooky.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't know if you planned on talking about this one or not, Rob, but this might be later in the classification system. But the one where it in the driveway, is that one you were planning on talking about?
Oh, the Rosmead lights, yeah.
If you want.
Yeah, this is technically, you could consider it a CE2 case, but it's also kind of a ball of light type of case. It takes place, it occurs in this kind of primary school in Rosmead, South Africa. And let me just bring that up.
Yeah, of course, man. I put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're good, man. You're good. Bringing up the cases, because I got it all written down. So,
oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
this is November 12th, 1972. Rosmead, Karoon, South Africa, and this gentleman by the name of Harold Truder, he was the headmaster of this primary school. I can't remember what the name of it is, but he had been coming home from a vacation that he had taken for the weekend, and you know, it had been a warm day, and that's when he noticed this, like, it was around almost 8:30 at night. Noticed as he was coming back this red kind of ball of light in the sky, and it was shooting a beam down on this tennis court. He gets he pulls his car into the garage. He goes over, and that's when he notices that there's like some actual damage to the asphalt on the tennis court. It looks like it's been depressed, as if like a great weight has been sitting on it. He also finds these like aeration holes, like in strips on this thing. And the interesting thing here is that there are additional eyewitnesses to this case. There are nearby soldiers at a military camp. One of them, his name was S.J. Rousseau. He was, they had actually taken their mattresses outside because it had been just so hot. So they were just trying to get some air, trying to sleep. And they had these mattresses facing the tennis court. And that's when he saw at about 8:15, this light that just kept circling around the tennis court. For whatever reason, it was just incredibly interested in the tennis court. And, later on, because he assumed that these were like, I think like headlights or something like that, but he's like, or tail lights, but he's like, yeah, I didn't see any headlights. It was just this like red light. So, he observes it. And later on, Harold Truder ends up calling the police department out there because he assumes it's just some kind of vandalism. Somebody came and vandalized a random tennis court on the property of a, you know, primary school. Like, I understand it's brand new. I want somebody to face some accountability here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what they found is that whatever had happened had launched bits of the tarmac into the back of his garage, which was like 200 meters or so away.
Oh, wow.
Or something like that. So whatever
it
was,
had some force.
Yeah, and there was a nearby tree that some of these pieces ended up going into. There was actually some burn marks on the tree. And there were like leaves that ended up dying on this thing. So it's one of those weird like cases that Cynthia Hine had an interesting take on it, because like they had called scientists out here and some of them were saying, well, it just melted in the sun, which no, like I've seen 100 degree days. I've been in 100 degree days. It doesn't happen up here that often, but it does.
Yeah.
It doesn't melt like that. So, you know, they initially threw that out. But the thing that Cynthia Hines said about this case was that she believed that whatever this light was, it got itself stuck in the tarmac and it essentially pulled itself out. And then,
oh, interesting.
And ended up ejecting all these like small bits and pieces and, you know, everywhere. But like, yeah, these were like tiny pieces of the tarmac on that tennis court, but they just like embedded themselves in this tree in the back of this guy's garage. And yeah, it's just, it's one of those weird kind of CE2 cases where there aren't a lot of explanations, but like you've got a tennis court where it just looks like it's depressed into the ground. And not only that, you have like perforated holes nearby, which was very strange, but just one of those odd kind of cases that, you know, pop up
That image stuck in my head when you talked about it in your lecture, so I had to bring it up. It was killing me. But tennis court, that's I'm imagining like in Superbad, you know, when all the bottles of beer and stuff get shattered and the guy there is like, F my life, because he's got to clean it all. I'm expecting someone like who just finished constructing that tennis court, and then like that day UFO comes down and completely destroys it, and he's just left there like, F my life, UFO, of course. Right. Anyways,
right? Act of God. Act of God. Papers, this is bullshit.
No, the government will pay for that, right? Act of God. Okay,
maybe. You know, if they got government funding into UFOs, maybe. But I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Mac Brazel, he might have got some hush money. We don't know fully, but you know. people said he bought some like a new truck or something. Good for him. He needed it. Definitely.
He deserved it. I know. Anyways, I'm sorry. I kind of, I shoehorned my way into your categories here. So whatever you want to talk about next, I can't wait, man. Thank you for doing this.
Oh yeah. This is kind of like the final category. It's broken down kind of into three parts here, but the CE3s, there are a lot of similarities to CE3s in the United States. So there are contactees from South Africa or from Africa and from South Africa, Elizabeth Clare, she, had an intimate relationship with a man named Akon. And again, I can't get the song Smack That out of my head every time I hear that because it's Akon. I mean, what are you going to do? But she claimed to have an intimate relationship with this tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed kind of guy.
Of course.
She ended up having a child, and it ended up, going to live on his home planet of Matan. And she was kind of upset that she couldn't live on the planet because the oxygen level was not to her sufficient needs. So, what it is. She became very well known within Africa for her experiences. She went on a lot of radio programs, which is a lot of the exposure that UFOs got was through radio programs. Cynthia Hine made appearances and a lot of other UFO witnesses made appearances on local radio stations and stuff like that. It wasn't often that the newspapers would carry this kind of stuff, but radio totally, totally there for it. One of my favorite cases is from 1951 from a guy who only gave his first name. He didn't want himself to be identified. His name was Henry. And he lived near the Drakenstein Mountains, and he was living there. He worked for the British Rheostatic Company at the time. He was an engineer, and this was around Christmas time in 1951. And his wife's car. And now his wife was Spanish. He was British, and they had this kind of like beater car, and it had been experiencing problems. It was a battery issue. So you spend 4 hours kind of like tuning the thing up, replacing the battery, all that stuff. And at around 11 o'clock, he's like, I'm going to go drive this thing just to charge up the battery for a little bit. So he goes, takes a shower, gets in the vehicle, and he decides to drive up Drakenstein Mountain. And, it takes him about, from the time that he leaves to get to the time that he gets to the top, it takes like 15 minutes. And he stops for a bit, looks around. There's kind of like an area, where a pull-off area where you can do that. But he gets it back in his vehicle, turns around, and he's heading down the road again. And he gets flagged down by a strange man that kind of just comes out of nowhere. He's very kind of human looking, but like a little shorter. Face is the features are mostly there. He's kind of got hair that's sticking up, but like he just waves him down, and he comes over to his window. He's like, "Do you have any water?" And he's like, "No, only water I've got's in a radiator." And the guy just, and this dude just starts getting upset. So he's like, come on, there's a stream just down the road. We'll get you some water. So this alien being gets inside this dude's vehicle and they drive down to the stream. Only thing that he has to collect it in is an old, it's like an old oil can. So gets out this old oil can and they clean it out a little bit and they fill it up. And he asks him where he needs to bring him. So he takes him to this area, just kind of like in the shadow of the mountain. It's completely dark. And this was on a night when the moon was out, full moon. And he's like, yeah, just drive over this way. And he's like, okay, it's a little rough right here, but let's drive on over. So drives on over, and his headlights fall on this UFO that's sitting there. It's suspended on legs. Sees kind of like a ladder from the bottom of it. And this guy ushers him, you know, has him come on. So he escorts him to the UFO. He climbs up and into it, and there's really just like one circular room. It's fairly large. There's like a bench that runs around the entire length of it. And he notices that there's like three other figures. The two of them are attending to this one that's laying down. And the one that escorted him in there basically told him that, yeah, he burned himself. So, we just needed some water to address the burn. Cool.
Damn, Ricky burned himself again. Always dealing with his BS when we're trying to do these earth excavations.
It's Ricky's first day. This is bullshit. But as a reward, this alien being says, hey, just ask me whatever you want. Like he does Reddit AMA, like right there. It's pretty cool. And, he's Henry's an engineer, so he starts asking him questions. He's like, where are you from? And he just points in a direction. He's like, from there. He asks him again, from there. Keeping it vague. I understand. Listen, I am human. I've seen what we can do. I wouldn't want to tell anybody where I'm from if I'm an alien, because holy shit, I see what Elon Musk is doing right now. I see what could happen.
Like when you someone asks for like your number, but you don't want to talk to this person, and you make your phone number like one off so that they will never reach you. I feel like right there. We're from right there. Oh, thanks. Perfect.
Definitely.
Well, I give him credit for asking that. Like, that's a good question to ask, you know. It reminds me again of like Homer Simpson, you know. Homer, ask me anything. Anything you want. You get one question. One question? Really? And that was his question.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Or three questions, I think it was. Really? I only get one question? Yes. That question? Yeah. Yeah, that's what it reminds me of. I butchered that, man. Wow. Let me stop. You continue.
So, Henry ends up asking him, it's like, how does your ship work? I noticed that there's no motor. He's like, oh, there's no motor. It's just, we use magnetic force. Cool.
Yes, you do.
We use, I think he said heavy metals that he create a motion that create their own artificial gravity, and bam, just, go anywhere. And the interesting thing is like, there is a chapter dedicated to this book. And if you enjoy UFOs, get yourself a copy of UFOs Over Africa. This is an amazing book. It has every case that you could think of. And the only one that you can think of right now is the aerial school landing, let's be honest. But you're going to get so much more in this book. There's a chapter dedicated in this book to scientific theories about what this alien told him and how it could possibly work. So if you want some science in your book, get that goddamn book. It's amazing. It's still in print today. And the publisher, Horace House, actually does a few different books. There's one from Irene Granchi, who was a famous Brazilian UFO researcher. She wrote a book decades ago. It's still in print. It's a fun book. Definitely get your hands on this book. But Henry, he This case wasn't even originally reported to Cynthia Hind. I don't even know if she was born at this time, but it was reported to JJ Benitez in Spain, and it ended up appearing in an issue of Flying Saucer Review, like in the 70s. I remember coming across it, going through the stuff, but it was a really small, compact UFO, but you know, kind of like the TARDIS, bigger on the inside, and kind of had like a control panel in the middle of the room. Didn't really know what it was for. This alien didn't explain things very well. Let's just put it
very
like that.
Very vague alien. Yeah. It, you know what, man? It reminds me so much of the Herb Schirmer case, mm-hmm. like kind of giving a tour of the inside of a craft. But when you ask like, what does this do? They're like, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Where are you from? Exactly.
There. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I should have changed my question then.
I mean, those aliens fed him so much bullshit. I felt bad for her.
Well,
you know,
my question is, you know, what did they really need the water for? I don't believe it was for a burn. Like, we hear this all the time that, like, maybe water is a source they need. Why are so many UFOs seen around water? The possibilities are endless. But that's interesting that the one thing this alien would need was water. You do have to wonder. You do.
Yeah. Oh, and there are cases from Africa in which UFOs appear. There's a case with this one UFO that appeared over this woman's pool pump. And like every time I hear a pool pump, I can't not think of Ed Walters and this crazy crap just because it's just like the pool pump. The pool pump was the antagonist of that entire set of encounters that he claimed to have. It was always that goddamn pool pump. But this woman sees she thinks that her pool pump is kind of messing up because she hears this like giant hum, and like she's just this is like 2:30 in the morning. She's over it. She goes and she sees this like blue light right next to her pool pump. It's like, oh God, is it going to catch on fire? And eventually this light just like lifts away. She sees it in the neighbor's through the neighbor's window or something like that. So the next morning her husband goes outside and notices that there's like, I don't know, 300 less gallons in the pool.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, talk about siphoning. What the hell is that much water for?
Yeah.
Where'd
exactly.
it go? Holy shit, man. So that just like, I was not expecting you to say that much. I was like, oh, maybe they took a foot off the pool. Like maybe they were like, the kids, they can't swim in 4 feet deep yet. So let's put it down to 3 feet for the human kids. But
yeah, it's pretty significant. Pretty significant. There's another story in which this couple, they had a water tank that was like 2 inches from the top. They looked at it like one night right before went inside, went to bed, came out the next morning. The thing was bone dry. There was no evidence of a leak or anything like that. But there were reports of UFOs in the area. So it's the only explanation that fits here.
You decide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I want to believe. I want to believe like everybody, you know?
Absolutely, man. I love it. That now, I hope that they know there was chlorine in that. That could change everything.
That could be a whole different ballgame, man. that could ruin an alien powered system, I'm assuming. You know, you get some.
It's like putting diesel in your like little moped or something.
Oh yeah, you're gonna ruin that thing.
Your skin's gonna get all wrinkly if you're in the chlorine too long.
Oh god. Yeah. It's terrible.
The things we could teach these aliens and they could teach us. Anyways, I digress. What else you got for us, man?
So I'll hit you with a couple more here. Two more.
Cool.
So one of the kind of other sort of well-known cases from South Africa is known as the Mindelore incident. And this goes back to January of 1979. Megan Cazette, she was up late reading. It's around midnight, and her son Andre gets up, says he can't sleep, so they end up going to the kitchen to get some water, and that's when they hear their dog, whose name was Cheeky, barking up a storm. So she opens the door, yells for Cheeky to come in, and that's when she noticed that Cheeky just jumped the fence, like, you know, some Olympic kind of shit here. And she and Andre just run out, chase the dog up a couple streets up into this service road that was being built at the time. And that's when they notice like what they thought was a plane coming in for a landing. She described it as being like a pink light. And then getting closer, that's when she noticed that this was kind of a saucer-shaped object that was surrounded in light. It had legs down that it was standing on. And she and Andre just like stood there for, you know, a few minutes. And that's when they noticed these six figures that got out of it. And they started like moving around and kind of messing with the soil and the asphalt and stuff. Most of these figures were like clothed from head to toe. They were wearing kind of like a single onesie kind of deal here, but two of them, they described them kind of like wearing like doctor's lab coats and pants. They had dark olive skin. They had like beards, black hair. And when one of them started to play with the soil in their hands, they noticed Megan and Andre just standing there staring at them. And like, these figures were conversing back and forth in languages. Like it seemed like two totally different languages. So the figure that with the black hair comes up to Megan, bows and starts talking to her in a language that she didn't understand. At first she was okay. And then she just got terrified. So she tells Andre to go and get their, his father. She's kind of anchored to the spot. She's kind of paralyzed. She says she can't move. And when they see that she is terrified, the beings all of a sudden disappear. Like they just reappeared back in the ship. Now, initially, this thing doesn't take off. The legs of this thing, she describes the legs as getting bigger. And it starts like walking around a little bit, like, you know, War of the World style.
Yeah.
Until it just into the air. But I'm like, no.
Pretty creepy, yeah. No H.G. Wells for me, please. Nope. That's not what I want in my UFO landings.
My UFO cannot handle that. you know, just I don't have the mental capacity to make it through a day most days, so I don't see that being a good thing to happen to me. Is like, hey, you know what? Why don't you see my UFO do some crazy stuff on its legs?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, bust you. A move, UFO, bust a move. I love that, man. That's so cool, though. Especially since they bowed. Like, how polite. Yeah. How polite of them.
Nope. Yeah, just, you know, incredibly polite and just doing what they're doing. It kind of has, like, the George Obarski Stonehenge vibes of, you know, collecting soil, looking at stuff, and then just, like, getting back in your ship and taking off.
Isn't that I love these older cases where like they actually seem to have a purpose, you mm-hmm. know, these beings or intelligences, like collecting soil, collecting water, unfortunately sometimes experimenting on human beings or animals, even if you you know, find the whole cattle mutilation thing. That's interesting. So is that kind of how that case ended? It kind of walked around and then maybe it needed to get a running start. That's kind of I'm picturing.
Sometimes that happens. The craft and the Lonnie Zamora incident needed that little boost to get into the air. And then, you know, it was good. It was good. You know, sometimes you need that boost to get up and there's no shame in that. Look, I get it. Sometimes people got lifted trucks. You need maybe sometimes you need a stool. I don't know. Sometimes it's just tough to get up into those things. But I
know that feeling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. Been there. I mean, if you grew up, you know, in the Adirondacks or like anywhere beyond New York City, lifted trucks, man, they were just they're just a way of life around here.
Still are. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say some things never change, man. Even in Syracuse, some things never change.
Exactly, sure. Man. Exactly.
love it. Awesome. And you have one more for us, you said?
I do. Cool. Wouldn't be complete if we didn't have a CE4, an alien abduction kind of case.
Let's go there.
And what's interesting here is like the abduction cases, you have your traditional abduction cases. They come up here and there. But the cases that Cynthia Hine talked about were cases in which it seemed like they were trying to take the soul out of the body almost. And just this feeling of being lighter and being lifted out. And one case in particular it involves a man named Bruce. He is of Black African ancestry, and he was from Zimbabwe. And in November of 1989, this is when, you know, abductions are huge in the United States. And because they are huge in the United States, they start to receive exposure in other parts of the world. And in Africa itself, there are cases that start to come forward from people in the late 80s of abductions. So that's just the landmark, you know, the impact that like books like Communion and Intruders were having Intruders. At this time. Those two books are kind of monumental to the public face of UFOs and aliens. And in particular also is when Roswell incident appeared on Unsolved Mysteries. Those two things right there, those books and that special, because like that Unsolved Mysteries special was like half the show. It was huge. Right. It like kind of catapulted UFOs into a mainstream that it had never seen before. Like this was, it had a whole new image as opposed to before where, you know, it wasn't getting the serious treatment and it was seen as like, oh, the government's covering it up and yeah, like pure cover up and stuff like that. This now was a wider facing phenomenon. Not only that, you had other individuals now feeling comfortable enough to tell their stories, which is important.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So Bruce, his first experience, November 1989, he worked in some fields in Zimbabwe, and he came home, he showered, he lived with his mother. And as he was going to sleep, because he didn't eat, he just took a shower and decided to go to bed. And he described how his hands and legs just like all of a sudden, as he's like trying to fall asleep, they felt dense. And he had this feeling like someone was in the room with him. He heard this loud whirring sound like a motor. And his first thought was, this is a ghost. This is, you know, this is absolutely terrifying. So it eventually passes, but it makes him remember that these incidents had happened to him in his childhood, and they just kept coming up over and over again. This feeling of paralysis, this feeling of like, you know, weight and weightlessness and such. But the follow-up experience that Bruce had was just utterly terrifying. And it had, it seemed to be related to health problems that he was having. This was in July of 1990, and Bruce, he kind of wakes up, he's feeling ill that day. His skin was actually burning. He said his throat was sore and that his eyes were actually swollen. He couldn't keep any food down at the time. So one thing that he noted was that a lot of the times when he had experiences, sore throat was the common feature of them. He would often suffer from them afterwards. But he started to recall that there was one experience, and this experience had happened a day or two before. He was in that similar feeling of just feeling dense and weighed down and unable to move. And that's when he noticed that there was a figure sitting in a garden chair over by his door. And this strange being, when he noticed that Bruce noticed him, got up. He said that he floated on over to him And he described them like the description similar to a gray in many ways, but he moved towards him, started to pull back on his hair, and said, "If you tell anyone about this, I'll kill you. I'll finish you off." And Bruce tried to fight back, pushed him right back down in that bed. And this was just, he said that the face was just very white. So like very gray in description, just like very white, non-human figures. And that terrifying description of it gliding, just no, thank you. There was physical evidence in this case, but for instance, he noticed that the next day as he got up that because he had, I believe he had a dirt floor, and he noticed that in the floor there were these very small looking footprints that led from his wardrobe to the front door, and they just disappeared.
Ooh.
No, thank you. The very, like, there are other similar cases in which there was woman named Caroline who had this like really dramatic encounter in her bedroom where she saw this kind of globe of light come into her bedroom. But the weird thing is like through the roof, she could see this like tunnel of light that connected to a UFO outside. She could actually see the trees from inside her room, and she described this weightless feeling and stuff, and eventually she was able to get up. She wakes up her mother, wakes up her sisters. They're all sitting in the living room, and all of a sudden she starts to feel this again. And her sisters, when they were talking to her, describe how when they were looking at her, our eyes were like brilliant orbs of light, like some like you know, Ghostbusters 2, Janosch in the hallway, light eyes. I'm getting those vibes, and I do not like it. I mean, if you're
GB2 vibes,
yeah, total GB2 vibes. You know, he's got that painting of Vigo around, and you know, he's just doing his best to restore it. It's that kind of vibes. But the CE4 cases are incredibly interesting because there is a range of them. It just in like the very, from the very strange to the very typical. There were two women, Phyllis and Diane. I will recommend you go watch my presentation or listen to it, because like these two women, one of them was just not having it the entire time she was on this craft. Every single time she was resisting, she was like, "No, I don't want to go." And they're just like, "It's okay. Everything will be fine." And like, they're telling her to get onto this table. And she's like, "No, I'm not getting on this table." Until she's just like, "All right, you know what? Whatever. You're persistent. I'll get on the table." And she just goes with it.
Oh my God, man. I'm imagining like Phyllis and Diane, like, what was that old show where the women worked in like the bottle factory, you know,
doing it
our way or whatever that was?
Yeah, I'm getting those vibes. I'm definitely,
it's escaping my mind, but I'm seeing like, "Phyllis, no, we're not going. Diane, I want to do this. Let me do this. You're either my friend or you're not. We're going to do this together or not." That's amazing.
And it's funny because like Diane, like when this is going down initially, they're seeing this object, she's kind of reticent, but like Phyllis, who is her mother, is like, "Come on, Diane, if you don't look at this thing, you're going to be missing out."
Live a little. Amazing, yeah. Man. Well, hey, you know what? That actually, to be serious, that reminds me of like the juxtaposition with Betty and Barney Hill. Like, mm-hmm. Betty was so like, "Let's do this. Like, show me the star map. What do you want? Can I take something to bring back?" And then meanwhile, like, Barney is just like, "F no, get me the F out of here. I want nothing to do with this." It's interesting when you have two people having an experience and how like one really wants to do it, and it seems like always the other one doesn't. I don't know if that's true in all cases. Obviously, you look at like the Allagash case or something like that. But that is interesting when you have a pair of people having a singular experience. It always seems that one really wants to embrace it and one wants to rejected. Yeah. I came across a case like that with a mother and daughter as well, where the mother thought it was like the most euphoric, amazing experience. And the daughter was like, nope, hate it. Hate it. Wouldn't want to date it. So
yeah,
I don't know, man.
No. And I mean, like, if you want to know about that case, folks, you need to go get Ryan's book because it's in there, because I've read it before. And there is there's a terrifying moment in that book involving when the mother comes into the room when her daughter's about to go to bed, and there's something that follows her in, and I don't like it. I don't like it, but you know what? It's a hell of, it's a hell of a read. So go get Somewhere in the Skies. It's a good book. You know what? Thanks, I'm in buddy. It. So go get it.
You are, which I'm so honored. Yes. If that is not a selling point, I honestly don't know what is, to be completely honest.
I mean, shamelessly self-plugging. I'm on the best UFO podcast of all time. It's been announced, folks. Okay. It is final. The votes were tallied. Okay. And it was awarded last night on the best UFO podcast in a hell of a UFO book. Just consume.
We're all ascending, brother.
Yeah, I'm here for shameless plugs. You can pay me later. PayPal me, whatever.
Virtual check is in the mail. No, hey, that's a lot of pressure, but no, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about UFOs in Africa, man. And you, of course, I knew you would bring it. Like, I had to do very little lifting in this episode. Mm-hmm. So I have to thank you for that. But I guess to kind of, unless you have anything else, any other cases you want to share, I'd love to kind of not conclude, because we never conclude these things. Nothing's ever solved. Nothing's never. Ever answered. More never. Questions than answers. But what do you think we need to do here in the United States to really invite more of a global view of these cases? Because again, we get so caught up in Roswell and the Tic Tac and like all these things happening here in America, when there's a whole world out there. I mean, I'm looking into Bolivia, I'm looking into Russia, and it's just blowing my mind how much data is out there globally that we're not taking into consideration when we're researching, when we're even investigating. So big loaded question for you. What do we do to like really welcome the rest of the world to like share these things, report these things, or can we even do that? I don't know.
I think there are a bunch of things that we could do. One, these cases deserve a seat at the table with every well-known case that is out there. You know, for all your Betty and Barney Hills, for all your, Belgian UFO waves, and for all your Antonio Villas-Boas, all these cases deserve a seat at the table. For one thing, people need to talk about them more. Like, seriously, whenever anybody's like, I wanted to cover a case, but I saw that you covered it and I didn't want to do it. Cover it. Like these cases deserve to be covered. Get yourself a copy of this book. I will shill for Cynthia Hind all freaking day. She's no longer with us. So honor her work. Go get UFOs Over Africa. Go read the cases in this book because they're endlessly fascinating, for one. Two, you're going to find the similarities, the differences, which is important to note. I also think allowing people to tell their stories is one of the most important things that anybody can do, regardless, especially now with the way that we could bridge technology and just do this. We can do this podcast, Ryan. We're hundreds of miles apart, but we can do it. Like opening those doors to people in other countries that want to tell their stories is incredibly important. And it gives this phenomenon a more broad view, gives it a more inclusive view. It gives it a better view because you have a more complete picture when you can see all of these cases from all over the world and see how they are the same, how they're different, how they affect people. And giving these cases a seat at the table is incredibly important. And that was one of the things that I wanted to do with my presentation, is give these cases a voice that they definitely needed, because again, there are probably investigators in Africa, but it's just they are not easy to find. Again, yeah. if you try and Google UFOs in Africa and like, yeah, there are probably better search terms that you can use. There aren't a lot of people yet you could probably report to, but like encourage those people to report where they can report to. If it's to MUFON, report to MUFON. If it's to New Fork, report to New Fork. If it is a podcaster that you feel comfortable sharing your story with, report it to them. Send them an email. Get in touch with them and say, hey, I've got a story. Can I tell you my story? Absolutely. And that's definitely important. And, you know, if you can feature these stories on podcasts, great. They deserve to be known. They deserve to be recognized. And, you know, just they deserve to be embraced by the UFO community, even if they, you know about them or probably don't. Because, again, this was an issue that I started to think about in 2018. And like, why aren't there a lot of UFO cases that come from Africa? Why is it that the only UFO case that we talk about from Africa is the Ariel school landing? Again, a very incredibly important incident, but not the only one. So, you know, that's kind of what fueled this. But like when I listened to the Saucer Life episode about Elizabeth Clare, I was like, holy crap, there are other cases from Africa. Yeah,
right.
That's important. So to anyone listening, to anyone that has a platform, just give these cases, give these witnesses a platform to share their stories. And, you know, the more well-known that these stories become, these cases, you know, the better view and more inclusive view that we have of this phenomenon.
Absolutely, man. I couldn't have said it better. I mean, if you have that platform, amplify those voices, especially, you know, voices of color who we don't honestly hear a lot from in this community. And, you know, that's a whole other issue and episode we could have as two white guys talking here on a podcast in America. Like, but it's true, you know, like they're out there and it's a matter of welcoming more different types of communities in here to have this human conversation. And, and I feel like that's probably why a lot of people don't come forward or report things. They don't feel like they can or that they have a place. But like you said, everyone's got a seat at the table. Nobody knows when that turkey's going to be done and when we can all eat because we have no idea what the hell is going on. But like, why not get every viewpoint, every culture, everything? I just that's why I got involved with this topic. I don't know about you, but it was to find a community. And the more I got into it, the more I realized, yeah, there's going to be those darker corners of these communities always that don't want voices amplified and don't want this or that. But overall, man, like it's just so, what better community, more open-minded than people who believe in aliens visiting our planet? So that's all I'll say. That's my kind of soapbox moment. Like, invite people into the conversation that you normally wouldn't. And let's all just try to find answers together.
Yeah. And not just, you know, people of color. They're definitely important. Their voices need to be amplified. LGBTQIA plus people, they deserve to have their voices amplified. Women deserve to have their voices amplified. Like these people deserve to have their stories told, to have a place for them, and to contribute to this phenomenon, because it's a global phenomenon. There's no way to get around it. It's a global phenomenon. They are all part of this world, and the more inclusive that you make it, the better a grip you have on this subject overall, but a better community that you're going to, you know, ultimately create.
Absolutely, man. When that UFO finally lands and we're ready to finally make grand contact, they're not going to give a crap what country you're from, what religion you believe in, what color you are, what orientation. Yeah. It's going to be all of us working together. So it's beautiful. Yep. I love it. And I love that you highlighted these cases for us, man. And I also love that you shared your personal experiences over on Our Strange Skies recently. with the Gentlemen of Astonishing Legends and everything. So I got to ask, can you tease us a little about that episode and what you got coming next over there at Our Strange Skies?
Yeah, absolutely. So I sat down with Scott Philbrook and Forrest Burgess from Astonishing Legends and Rich Haddam, who is the screenwriter of the Mothman Prophecies, TV writer, good friend of mine. And I basically said, hey, I've never given people the chance to just like grill me about my experiences. So here's 2 hours. Have at it. And, you know, we talked about some of my experiences that I've talked about on other pods and some experiences that I've never talked about before. And we kind of just started to like hash it out, and it's a great conversation. The presentation I gave for Paranormal Con is, online. You can listen to the audio on the Our Strange Skies feed right now. If you want to watch the video, if you want to watch me be hectic for 2 hours on a video, you can subscribe to my Patreon. Oh yeah. They subscribe to the Patreon. You'll get to watch that. But, coming down the line, I, am in research on an episode about the aerial school landing and other, landings at other schools, because there are lots of them, like Preston Dennett, like, documented a bunch of them in a book, and like that book is endlessly fascinating. He's an interesting figure, been doing this a long time in this field. Yeah. But we'll be talking about the aerial school landing. I'm in the beginning stages of research on a couple specific abduction cases. So that's pretty much what you got coming on down the line. If you subscribe to the Patreon later this it would have already come out by the time this episode comes out, but there will be an episode about further African cases that I just recently stumbled upon that is like, oh, hey, that's cool. Oh, there was a UFO wave in South Africa in 1972. Cool. Let's talk about that. So yeah, more cases from Africa. If you're so interested, check out the Patreon.
Awesome, man. And again, you're not just a one-trick UFO pony. I know you do another podcast as well. Would you mind telling us a little about that before we say goodnight here?
Yep. So my other baby is Rolling Through the Realms. It is a Dungeons & Dragons podcast. If you enjoy tabletop role-playing games and, you know, if you want to hear conversations about how our cleric is more like a wizard, go check that out. I'm also a part of the Order of Podcasters, which if you're really into UFOs, go check this podcast out. We're coming up on our season finale, and there's about 20 some odd episodes in the feed right now, but it's basically kind of like if the X-Files folks had regular day jobs, what would they be like? And I play a George Norrie like character that, you know, definitely takes it to extremes. If you listen to the first episode, I definitely talk about, you know, pizza rolls giving your mouth third degree burns. It's the way it is, you know. You got to celebrate those moments. So if that appeals to you, and if you know, a scripted show about people trying to save horrors from coming into our world, go check out the Order Podcasters too.
I love it, man. I love everything you do. You are a Renaissance man through and through. So as usual, I have to thank you for coming on UFO Happy Hour, our fan favorite series with Rob Christofferson. And as always, brother, thank you for coming on Somewhere in the Skies today.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me on again. These are always great, man, because it's just, you know, let's bring all this crazy shit to the table and let's talk about it.
Let's do it. I'm hungry.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.